I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast number 198. I'm Adam, and with me this week so far is Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
I am your servant.
Yes, I know. Mary Lang.
Am I excited or worried? I hate that in-between feeling.
Matthew Kressel.
We had a distraction. Time to get on with our work.
And Robert Haynes.
Bloody Leicester and at it again. I'm getting bloody sick of this.
Stop swearing. And this week, joy, rapture, we're going to be talking about Power of the Daleks Reimagined. Right, before I duck out of this one, because I hated it, I just wanted to talk about the positives. The performances of the actors in it were very good. The special effects, as far as it, and the sets and everything, the Daleks looked great. The bloke who played the Doctor was probably the best person to play for the Doctor outside of canon. I thought he did quite a good job, but he just wasn't the Doctor to me in my mind. But they obviously, really, without somebody doing a proper impression of Troughton or whatever, they had to go down the road they did with it. But, oh, God. Yeah, I watched it, but I couldn't wait for it to finish. It wasn't Doctor Who to me, unfortunately. I do apologise. I know everybody else is going to be completely different to me, but I just didn't like it. And I'm afraid that it was a bit of a chore for me. So that's about that. You lot carry on. I might chip in with the odd phrase here and there, but you got to carry on.
Well, I suddenly feel bad for suggesting it.
Oh, don't be so silly. You always have to feel bad about stuff, Matthew, don't you? No, it's fine. It's something that I think was a good idea. I went for it, didn't like it. As other people watch normal Doctor Who and don't like it, Ben Shoveler, for example. So it's just one of those things.
Is he normal?
Yes.
So this Big Finish stuff I don't like. So, but this one, no. But for me, that's me personally. But I'm sure you lot loved it. So please talk about what you loved or hated or didn't like or found mediocre or basically about the story itself. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I suggested this, and I obviously wouldn't have suggested it if I didn't like it. And watching the movie version of it this morning, I actually just finished it. I just finished watching about 30 minutes ago.
That was only 50 minutes long.
Yeah, apparently you don't sleep.
Well, I'll go to sleep once we're done recording.
We bore you that much? Okay.
Speak.
This is my way of winding down. So
more winding up. Oh, poor Matthew. We love Matthew, don't we, everybody?
I just go to sleep and dream of strangling everybody over Skype. Where was I? I greatly enjoyed it. It's a fan production, which is the first thing to keep in mind. To give some background to this, Dick Scovell, who played the Doctor in this, also adapted and directed it, and Rob Thrush, who was the producer of it, have done a number of stage adaptations of missing stories over the years. Starting, I think, in 1995, they did a version of Web of Fear on stage, which, of course, is no...
I've got a recording of that.
If you do, let me know, because I'd be very interested in seeing it. And they followed that up a couple of years later with Fury from the Deep. And then in the mid-2000s, as Doctor Who was starting to come back, they did first Evil of the Daleks and then Daleks Master Plan in Portsmouth, I believe, if I remember correctly reading the website. Unfortunately, between those latter two productions, Doctor Who came back and the BBC got very protective of the Doctor Who license again, having not previously cared about it very much, which would certainly explain some of the stuff that came out during the Wilderness years, but neither here nor there.
Yes.
To the point that even though the productions were all done to raise money for children in need, they were in fact told they could not do they were supposed to do an on-air presentation with one of their Daleks, I think after they did the production of Evil. And they were in fact told they couldn't do it, and initially they could not get the rights to do Daleks Master Plan. And apparently, from what I've read, Russell T. Davies and Julie Gardner had to step in personally for them to get the rights. And then the BBC informed them that they would get the rights to do Master Plan, but it would be the very last time they would get it. Don't come back and ask us in the future. So out of that, you get this production. Which, it's a reimagining. That's the whole point of the title. It's not the exact same story that would have gone out in 1966.
No, I accept that. I understand and accept that. It's just, yeah, no, I understand they did a good job to a certain degree of telling the story. Because obviously I have heard the audio of Power of the Daleks. But it's just, for me, it's my enjoyment levels and whether I was engaged with the characters, basically. I just wasn't. So sorry, Matthew, I just wanted to interject on that particular point.
Matthew, while you're going, how did they get great Barnaby Edwards, Nick Briggs, and Lisa Bowerman?
Now, there's a story to be told.
I know you know it.
Yes. Well, that's because in the latter two, well, go back a bit further. In between the stage productions of in the 90s and then the 2000s, Nick Scovell and I'm trying to think of the other actor in this who worked for them as well, James George, worked for Big Finish. As a matter of fact, Nick Scovell is in two very early Big Finish audios. He's in Whispers of Terror as a detective character, and he's also the museum curator in the third Paul McGann audio, Stones of Venice. So if you've heard those and you wonder why he sounds familiar, that's why. And when they did the stage play of Evil, Nick Briggs came in to kind of advise them, and he actually did the Dalek voices for Dalek's Master Plan. And in fact, at the end of it, Nick Scovell regenerated into Nick Briggs on stage. So that was how they knew them. They'd worked with Big Finish in the past, which is how they got Nicholas Briggs, Barnaby Edwards, and Lisa Bowerman to all come in.
Well, there you go. Anyway.
Well, I can't say that I hated it or anything, because when I went back, because I didn't know much about Dalek's Master Plan, so I read about it. And knowing that that was six episodes.
What's Dalek Master Plan?
Yeah, what's Dalek's Master
Never
Plan?
Mind.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Dalek's Master
means.
Plan.
Power of the Daleks.
Power of the Daleks, I'm sorry.
Leave her alone. Magic, get ready.
Thank you, Adam. When I read about Power of the Daleks and heard and read that it was like six episodes long, and most of it did not have Patrick Troughton doing anything, you know, contributing a whole lot to it, and all, I thought that would have been really boring. So having it reimagined and reduced to 1 hour made me think that this couldn't have been that bad.
Well, they do a very good job of it. I mean, it's only a few minutes longer than your standard new series episode today, which I think kind of shows you the way that the old 60s stories were kind of, I don't want to say padded out because
padded
having,
out.
Well, I'm going to say that because I don't have a better description of it. I love Power of the Daleks. I love I love the original story, and I spent ages trying to do. I spent ages trying to do my own fan production of it originally as a fan film and then as a stage thing, and this kind of has superseded that idea. Though the Con K people keep trying to convince me that we need to still do it on stage because one of them read the script and was quite impressed with what I did with it.
He says
so
modestly.
Not tooting his own horn or anything.
Good for you, Matthew.
Yeah. Well, you're only as good as your source material. That said, I have seen some pretty poor versions of Dracula.
Yes.
Well,
we all love you,
Matthew.
Don't worry.
For what it is, it is a fan-made thing, so it doesn't have the, you know, the high production values that a regular TV program would have. So although I had a lot of problems with it, I just kept reminding myself, well, you know, this is not a professional production. It's amateur. I mean, just like all the main male characters all pretty much look alike. They're all chubby, grizzle-faced, you know, and it's hard for a while to distinguish one from the other.
I have
like
to disagree with you when you say it was an amateur production, Mary. Yes, it was a fan-produced thing, but all the people in it are professionals. And it's not down to them that I didn't enjoy it. I can see the effort put into it. You know, it's just I was just distracted by certain aspects of the performances by the actors. I don't think I can think of anybody who didn't put a good performance in it.
Yeah, I agree.
I just did not enjoy it simply because it didn't work for me. I think that's the problem I had with it. It just didn't work with it. They told the story quite well. They condensed it quite well. But for me, there's something, it just didn't have that Doctor Who edge. I know what they were trying to do, but it just didn't work for me personally. So I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I watched the episodic version first, and I could not accept Paul. You said Scovell, is that how his name is pronounced?
Nick Scovell is his name.
Nick Scovell. Yeah. At first, I could not accept him either as the Doctor. But when I watched the movie version, I'd already gotten past that, and then I was appreciating him as a Doctor.
Mary?
Yeah.
Have you heard Unit Dominion?
No.
No, just because to me, I've been listening to it, and the guy who claims he's the Doctor in it sounds very much like Nick Scovell. I don't know why. Mm. But I'm imagining, as I'm listening to it, I imagine that it's him, but Matthew would probably know who's
I think plays. We can also, I'm just thinking of other performances by other actors who tried to play the Doctor. I haven't watched the Richard E. Grant cartoon yet, because me and Isabella are supposed to be watching that for TV purposes. I'll be interested to see how I sort of engage with his characterisation of the Doctor. Watch this space on that one. But obviously there have been others in other productions. And anybody who tries to play the Doctor that isn't actually an established Doctor actor is always going to find it difficult. But I will say that Nick Scovell, is it, or Scovell? His performance is the best I've seen of somebody who's not actually really genuinely associated with the Doctor. So well done for him for that. He's a pretty good actor, actually, so I'll give him that.
I think you warm to him. I think he grows on you after a while.
Yeah.
I think first off, watching him, I think he comes off a bit of, you know, I'm over-exaggerating or overplaying things, but then you sort of get used to him, I reckon, after a while. So.
And Barnaby Edwards played the Prime Minister, doesn't he?
Prime Minister,
I thought he played that in a beautifully camp way.
Yes.
Well, that's
where I had a problem, was I couldn't decide whether this was camp or whether it was serious, because the whole thing moves along in a very serious way. People are getting killed, and the performances for the most part seem very serious, and I was totally engaged in the story, and then it ends on a comedic note. So I thought, well, did I miss something along the way? Was this supposed to be a send-up rather than a serious production?
Not having seen not being familiar with the original Power, obviously it would be difficult to see it. How does it end? I mean,
unless, no.
Spoilers.
It ends. No, the way it ends in the book or the TV series is they just beat the Daleks, basically. But totally unlike, you know, what happens in the. There's a lot of death, but there's none of this coming back with the Daleks and the TARDIS kind of thing, though. That's just completely
of this. The TV version ends with a sort of a power overload, which destroys all the Daleks. And then the Doctor, Ben and Polly going back into the TARDIS, and as the TARDIS is taking off, there's a Dalek, the remains of a Dalek nearby that suddenly twitches or something. It's difficult to know exactly what happens there, but certainly from what was in the script and also the memories of people who did watch it, there's an implication that the Daleks might still be alive.
Tell you what, though, the fact that they were all in the TARDIS, weren't they, at the end, reminded me of that unused clip of the Doctor, the Tennant Doctor, when he was surrounded by Cybermen.
Yes.
Before the special. And something struck me as very odd, why they didn't think this through.
Are you all right?
Such a thing as the doctor being confined to a room that had a door with no latch on it and nobody protecting it from the side. So why did he feel like he had to stay in there? I mean, any doctor I know would have been out of there in a flash.
Mary, they did have that guy guarding it when they showed you the second time he was locked in there. Well, not locked in there. When he went out to go outside, there was that big guy standing out.
He was just walking in. When you see them put the doctor in there, they walk away. You can see through the glass that they're just walking away. So there isn't anybody there guarding. And the guy that he's confined with, the Echo Warrior, as they call him, some of the comments.
He was a unit guy.
Yeah.
Well, but the doctor's comments when he shakes his head and says, youth, you know, you – and then how tech savvy the guy is, I then recast him as somebody much younger, but calling him, you know, but disparaging him by saying, ah, youth, and he's just as old as the doctor, struck me as odd.
He's not as old as the doctor.
So anyway, does anybody...
Dr. Sanford's 8 years old.
Thank you for that. Does anybody feel the same way about it as I do, or is everybody else just totally against me?
I didn't mind it. I didn't have any real...
I didn't mind it either.
My biggest problem with it was the one thing Mary said. I couldn't tell the difference between fat, unshaven characters.
Yeah.
There were what, three fat unshaven guys and one fat shaved guy.
Yeah.
And so that made it confusing. Mm-hmm. I never, even though I have the movie length version, I only skimmed through it mainly to get the quotes that I was going to use because I didn't expect to be first to use the obvious quote.
That depends what you thought was obvious, though.
Right.
Seeing that that particular quote was the one that was used in Victory of the Daleks, modified.
I was thinking of I'm the Doctor, I'm an examiner for the United Nations. So I was thinking about that one as well. I mean, that was one that was obvious, but nobody took it.
And I was impressed that they got Barnaby and Nick. I thought it was very well done. I'm not sure what changes were made with the movie version because I didn't watch the movie length version.
Version was just the episodic version without the cliffhangers.
Yeah.
There's some slight re-editing. The sort of the opening teaser, for lack of a better description, is moved forward slightly to when you get your first shot of on the TV screen of the Dalek capsule, and then the credits kick in instead of when the Doctor turns around. And I think they've retouched some of the special effects, but otherwise there's no new material. It's not been hugely re-edited in any kind of way.
Yeah, obviously, I have seen the surviving bits in, I believe it's in one of the Lost in Time.
Lost in Time.
Come
on, Mary, chime in.
Lost in Time.
Lost in Times. Now you know how Matthew feels.
Yeah.
I knew how Matthew felt before Matthew ever joined us.
Oh, I see.
I had been hoping for more of a tribute to the scene of all of the manufactured Daleks that they didn't quite do the teleported Daleks. They didn't do it quite as well. I really liked the way that we had assembly line Daleks in the original.
But the toys.
It was cool.
The ones going around the corner as well.
Yeah, it was cool. I wanted a tribute to that, and they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't, and that was an iconic scene. It was okay for.
Well, you say
for
like
what
how
it
many,
is.
How many people actually saw that?
But mind
this,
you.
This was made by fans with kind of an idea that was for a fan audience, people would have seen it.
My question is, because I haven't seen all the Dalek episodes, have Daleks ever put people to death by sucker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Three times now.
Because I didn't know if that was a real thing or if that was also
In the original Power of the Daleks. Yes, you remember when Dalek, in the episode Dalek, Mary, I don't know if you've seen that one, but it's brilliant, good. The Dalek can't use his gun, so the only way he can kill is with his sucker.
Yeah, okay. And the first Dalek episode from the Christopher Eccleston season, the one Rob Sherman wrote,
I think that's the same one that he just talked about.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's what
sorry, I tuned that. Sorry, I was looking something up. My apologies.
I thought you might be.
I guess I just forgot.
Right then, sorry, Robert, what did you think of it?
I didn't mind it. It's, as I said, you warmed to sort of the Doctor's performance. But one thing that I sort of missed was that it was an obvious use of a location. I think it was part of a naval base or something, wasn't
it? Falklands? Or you mean the real location?
No. They had the cooperation of the Navy, English Navy.
Oh, that's right.
But, so I guess they used some of their premises or whatever. But I would have, I guess, more liked to have a set rather than dressing an existing location. That's sort of my only sort of problem with it.
I liked that it was in a real location.
I just wonder if it might have worked a bit better for me if the Doctor had a companion or something just to sort of
I think
off.
That would have helped, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
And one thing I did like was that they changed the Vulcan planet to the Vulcan Corporation.
Yes.
Because that's always...
That was clever.
If that one's ever... if power is ever recovered, as it were...
Which...
That's going to bother me.
What? That it's changed?
The Vulcan... No. The fact that
it's not on the planet Vulcan.
Yeah.
It's Spock.
Yeah, well, it is on the planet Vulcan. But, yeah. Never mind.
That's an example of where they did have a throwback, a way that the fans would know, aha, Vulcan.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, somebody just hit their microphone. Ooh. Go on then, Matthew.
Not me.
Well, I was going to just point out a little Easter egg at the beginning when we're talking on the topic of Vulcan. You notice the Doctor is looking at the magazine. If you look on the back of the magazine, there's Nicholas Briggs as the CEO of the Vulcan Corporation.
Yeah, but going I noticed back, that.
Wanted to go back to the point Robert made about the fact that it was a dress location and not a set. That's part of the difference when you're doing a low-budget, even independent film, let alone a fan film, where you are never going to make – you can't make your money back.
Well, as I said before, Matthew, everything about this production was really, really good. It's just – I could not engage with certain characters. I mean, the actors were great, but I don't know. There's something missing for me that made it not Doctor Who. It's just, fault this production as far as the effort's gone into it, the pictures, the sets, the props, the acting, great. But there's just something not quite right about it for me that doesn't make it Doctor Who. I know. Going back to when I was a lot younger, I used to get VHS tapes when Doctor Who wasn't on air. Wasn't this chap called, was it Bill Baggs, used to make...
BBB.
With Doctor Who actors. And these videos used to get released quite regularly. I remember buying one in which Colin Baker played a weatherman on a TV show. And
The Arizona Solution, which is also got...
That was actually quite good.
I've got as well. It's also got John Pertwee and Peter Davison.
Yeah, but that wasn't Doctor Who, but it was a pretty good, enjoyable production. It's probably one of the ones I actually did like. So that's just saying, but that way they weren't being Doctor Who. It was being a separate production with Doctor Who actors and fans of the show, and it was really, really good. So for this, for me, they had a really good go at it, and I know some people will like it. But it just wasn't enjoyable because I was too distracted by the fact that I couldn't engage with the characters. You lot all obviously have a slightly different feeling about it than I do. So, no? Okay, fine. Right then, would you like to move on? Because there's something I'd like to talk about that's not really connected with the Power of the Daleks Reimagined.
Sure.
Okay.
Matthew Kressel and Mary Lang were at a certain convention in Chicago last week, and I'm itching to hear more, even though they didn't record anything other than a very nice little audio they sent. I tell you what, though, that audio you sent in, I dropped it into the episode last week. I didn't want to listen to it until the podcast was finished, so I dropped it in and trusted you to do a brilliant job, and you did. And Mary, I reckon you should go into podcasting because you really do imparting
stories. But I kept getting that we're going off topic back onto the topic.
No, you're imparting stories. I just loved your little tale about Paul McGann and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Ooh, a little bit of Oh, bless. So, yeah, I just wanted to hear. Obviously, that was recorded near the beginning, wasn't it, of the weekend?
It was recorded, what, on Saturday?
Saturday night, I think about 10, yeah. About 9 or 10 o'clock Saturday night.
If you'd now like to update and include the stuff you didn't include last week, I'd be absolutely delighted. Thank you very much.
Well, I would like to include that on Sunday, they had a panel of all the classic companions that everybody could ask questions of in that. And when asked, Daphne Ashbrook in particular was asked, do you love the Doctor Who? Because she's so new to it and she was only in the movie. And she said, all along, she's been going to all these conventions, I've really liked it. It's been so much fun being involved in it. She said, because I went into it not knowing much about it, but she said, I want you to know that I fell absolutely in love with it. And she kept saying love, and I mean really love with it, on the XL weekend, because she had never been faced with that volume of people, all of whom were so sweet, so embracing, so, loving of the whole thing. And she said she was looking around at all the other companions and the other doctors that were there. And she says, I was the biggest fan in the room. I was taking pictures of everybody. And she was apologizing to the others saying, I hope you don't mind. I was taking pictures of you. But that is when she felt the total embrace of the Doctor Who love. And so now she says, I am the biggest fan and I love every bit of it. She started to break down and cry. And Nicola Bryant next to her started to break down and cry. And they were just crying openly on stage. While of course Fraser Hines was, trying to make jokes over the whole thing to get things moving along. But that was such a moving experience to hear them talk about that, how the XL weekend hit them, because then I came home and I heard your tape, Adam, from the XL weekend. And I'm telling you, I got all, heart aflutter and all that over some of the things that you recorded there. So I just wanted you to know that it affected them as much as it probably affected you.
Yes, it's for me, obviously it's the first Doctor Who thing I've been to, and I'm just thinking, oh, good Lord, it's the biggest one. Will everything else pale into insignificance? But I think if I'd gone to Chicago TARDIS or gone perhaps to Concus Turbus or even to, the big one in LA, if I could afford to do, I'd probably just as overwhelmed. But I think the XL one, it had everything, really, and it's just a shame that, you could only really buy tickets for one day. That's what I'm thinking. The BBC did the previous year they did the official Doctor Who convention for one day, I think it was. They've done this one. They've done a really good job. I just hope they think, hang on, this is a really good thing. It's a big money spinner. Obviously, they can't make the Doctor Who celebration, but if they can have the official BBC convention every year, just make it a weekend, even if it's at the XL or the old home of the Doctor Who experience. It would be the experience. when me and Alicia went to Olympia, wasn't it? That'd be great. I mean, a lovely thing to look forward every year. Anyway, look forward to every year. And I don't want to interrupt you too much because I'm itching to hear more.
It's got a powder for that.
Yes, thank you.
There's quite a difference in feeling of attending something nice and slick and professional like the XL thing and something which is more for the fans, done by the fans.
Yeah, even though the Chicago TARDIS is the second biggest one in the United States, it still has a very intimate feeling. You bump into the guests in the hallways and have a chance to, talk with them whatever. So
I know of people that bumped into doctors, like I said, somebody bumped into four doctors in the lift that was quite close to me in one of the queues. They were just going into the lift, heading down to one of the different levels, and there's four doctors in there.
Must have been an uplifting experience.
Probably as shocking for them as it was for you then, Robert. and because I bumped into John Coleshaw, forgot to record anything. But it's things like that. Yeah, I mean, they had to walk from somewhere to get to the stage where who was that DJ bloke called? Graham Norton, where he was. So obviously Tom Baker was interviewed on there. So some people were able to meet Tom Baker on his way up there. I was in the queue for Daphne, I think, at that point. So, it's just a matter of timing and being in the right place at the right time to a certain degree. It was huge, I must admit. Obviously, with being on a massive place like that, three different levels and loads of different things going on, which you couldn't really compact into one day, and you needed tickets for screenings. I mean, I don't think I could have fitted in a screening and queuing and all the other things. So that's the only thing for me. I think they should have been the facility for weekend tickets for the event. I know people did stay more than one day, but they had to buy tickets for two separate days. So anyway, back to Chicago TARDIS.
Well, that's the thing that was just going back to what you were just talking about, and the thing that makes me scratch my head about the Excel event, which is, sure, they knew that thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people were going to be there, but they
millions?
Still...
Yeah, I was going to say millions.
So I got going and couldn't stop.
yeah, you probably left several thousands off.
Well, I can't remember Paul Spragg from Big Finish, who sat down at their table, gave us an absolutely astronomical figure for how many people were estimated to be there in the end, which I can't remember what the number is off the top of my head, but it was just kind of like, good God.
Yeah, a lot, yeah.
You know, into the tens of thousands. And it's just like, why they did it as three one-day events instead of just doing it as one big weekend event where you could buy tickets to – well – the way Chicago does it, the way that Concourse Cerberus does it as well, is that you can buy a ticket, you can be there the whole weekend, or you can just come in for a day. Why they didn't at least make that an option is a bit beyond me, to be honest. But I think that talking about differences, that Chicago as well, because of where it's at least at the moment in the Westin, you have the hotel attached to it. Well, it's the... convention is that, well, it's called Chicago TARDIS. It was for many, many years, from what I understand, in downtown Chicago. But eventually there were apparently issues with being able to get venues and whatnot. It ended up moving out kind of into the suburbs, which is what Lombard is, which is where they actually hold it. It's also connected to a hotel as well as all that.
WindyCon, which is the general science fiction convention, used to be in downtown Chicago, and they moved out to the suburbs probably 25 years ago because of issues with getting some of the venues downtown. Mainly it was the unions. Hmm. But then they had several WindyCons in like the Hyatt downtown, mainly because it was required for the few times that they've had a WorldCon down there.
Well, I think that when I remember between when last year Chicago TARDIS ended, they were put out a whole big survey to get people to answer. Because they were, I think they did seriously consider moving it, and then just, I think eventually just decided to leave it where it was. And the thing I did notice about this year's convention is that unlike in the past, there wasn't a whole lot, you know, you usually have hockey kids and all sorts of other stuff going on. There really wasn't that. Somebody had a wedding or a wedding reception there during the weekend on Saturday night.
It's funny you say that because... There was a massive Muslim event at the XL the same day that I went there, and it was huge. And they still had the huge Doctor Who event. So it just goes to see how big the arena is, or the not arena is it? It's a venue, I suppose. Anyway, sorry, Matthew, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Carry on.
It's all right. It led to a rather surreal experience. I think this actually happened right after you left, Mary, because Dr. Phil and I chatted for a few more minutes in the hotel lobby. And then the bride and the groom came out into the lobby. We're going to get the elevators to go up to the room, and their in-laws are standing there, and they're completely surrounded by a ton of Whovians. And everybody's just clapping and cheering, and the couple's just standing there happy as can be, as you understandable for the occasion. And the in-laws are just like, who the hell are all these people?
Yeah. I know, watching the guests come in, you know, and looking gingerly around at all the cosplay going on. It was fun.
So anyway, so have you already outlined, Mary, your sort of highlights of the weekend?
Well, in terms of rubbing shoulders with various guests, we never saw Paul McGann out and about. And Peter Davison, a few people ran into him, but Colin Baker was the most sociable of the doctors. He could be seen quite often, you know, off talking with people. Yeah. But the most people-friendly one was Fraser Hines. My Lord, every time we turned around, we were bumping into him. He was always signing things, getting his picture taken, talking with people. And in the dealer's room, I met up with a guy who had been to the XL event, and he was, oh, he was furious. He said how poorly it was organized and how people were missing out on things, and he couldn't say a single good thing about it. So I was glad then to hear your recording later.
A single good thing about what? Which one?
About the XL event.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, he said he would go to Galley and to Chicago TARDIS, you know, many times over before he'd go back to an event like they had at the XL.
Yeah, I have to confess from reading stuff online that, Adam, your comments on the XL event have been one of the few positive comments I have seen about it. There's been a lot of people complaining. I think stuff that you kind of shrugged off, like missing things, the whole queuing stuff, queuing for stuff and missing other stuff as a result, has really, I think, got up a lot of people's nose.
I think the problem with that is that that most of the other people have already been to Doctor Who events that are better organised. And this is my first. This is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. That if I went to something else,
you can't compare it.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. For me, it was absolutely amazing the fact that I got to see and meet these people on the day of the anniversary. I think sometimes with any thing like this, people are looking to criticise things. You know, I'd see the negatives of things. And, yeah, I can see the negatives. I mean, I had a bored seven-year-old with me all day, and she wasn't very well either. So it was difficult enough that way. And, yes, the queue, there was lots of queues. But I will say about the queues, the ones inside, they did move fairly quickly. And the only thing, there was a bit of confusion about the autograph tickets, because obviously initially we thought that with the tickets you'd have to have photo ID. So I had to phone up CrowdSurge to make sure that I could get in without that. And then at the end of the day, all we needed was our printed off email things. And it was so lax that my meeting with Louise Jameson was timed for the second autograph sort of event. And she was there, and I just showed her on the thing. And they didn't bother looking at the time of it, so I got that out of the way earlier. once you were in that little thing, you could have had all six people and just sort of join the individual queues once you'd got through the big queue, if you know what I mean. So that was a bit, you know, that had been sort of outlined beforehand. You could have planned your day a bit better. You know,
I've never been to any of the really large conventions, but that's one of the things that Doctor Who conventions. That's one of the things that I still have issues with. I understand why the stars are isolated and the access is controlled, but I used to go to science fiction conventions back in the days where I could walk
back
up to
in the
someone.
60s?
No, not that old. I remember having getting on elevator with Larry Niven and having.
What's that, Grandpa? Nice,
control yourself, Mr. Haynes.
Having discussions with him, just nice discussions. And if I wanted to get something autographed, I could hand it to him right then. My ring world is autographed from an elevator encounter. And I've got Robert Heinlein's autograph, and his only restriction was that particular convention was one where they also had a program book that everyone, there was a page for autographs, and Bob Heinlein would not allow, he wouldn't autograph that. He would only autograph his books.
Okay.
Which I understand.
Another highlight was Sunday morning, because they showed the prequels to Day of the Doctor. So we got to see the one, you know, where they had the newly operating, I think it was some kind of a cyborg guy.
The headcam thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But
I think I'm justified in expecting the Time War, because not only was that one about, you know, the soldiering and the war, but then they also showed Night of the Doctor.
I am your soldier.
That led me, you know, to think that. But then they also followed that with Day of the Doctors, which I paid very close attention, trying to convince myself that this really is good, even though I still don't like it. And then they followed that with the five-ish doctors, and Peter Davison was there, right there, and he asked us, he said, do you want me to talk through it, or do you want me to wait and ask questions? And so we all yelled, you know, let's watch it and ask you the question. So he stood there, hands on hips, watching the whole thing with this huge grin on his face while, because over half the audience had not seen it yet.
Which was a surprise.
Yeah, that was a big surprise. So, I mean, the place just rocked with laughter. Everybody was enjoying it so much. And Peter Davison was not only enjoying it, but enjoying us as well, because he'd look out periodically and enjoy the reaction. So for him, this was new because that had just been put out. So he hadn't actually gotten a live audience reaction to his piece. And so the questions, you know, were many afterwards. And he told us the story about putting it together and how it grew and all that. And
that's what she said.
Of course, people were asking, you know, like, were you guys really under the sheets? And, you know, where did that scene come from?
Well, what was his answer? What was his answer?
Well, he never directly answered, of course. He's not going to.
He just said,
you saw us being put under the sheets, didn't you? You know, and that kind of an answer.
Yeah, that was his answer, I think, from that point onwards, because I know at the final three doctors panel they did on that Sunday, that question got brought up a couple of times, and that was his answer both times. And though he had Colin Baker sitting next to him, Colin never answered the question one way or the other. That panel was a big highlight because for anybody who doesn't know, they had Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and Paul McGann there, just to reiterate. And any one of the three of them is absolutely wonderful to watch. But you put two of them, let alone three of them together on the same stage, and it was just fun. They were incredibly funny.
Well, they've become such good friends doing all these conventions together. I mean, they're traveling companions and all that. So, yeah, they're very easy, relaxed, and fun together.
They had them in sort of rolling office chairs on stage. And somebody would come up and say, well, I have a question for Colin. And you'd just see Peter Davison kind of sigh, and he would just roll his way back behind Colin and would roll his way back out again at the end of the question.
So anyway, Matthew, what were your highlights of the weekend?
Oh, me. Well, I think I've highlighted some of it. I mean, I did a large number of panels, particularly on Friday, but did one more on the Sunday after we recorded the thing with Dr. Phil, and I immensely enjoyed all of those minus the Big Finish 101 panel I was on, which was, as if you've heard the thing, you'll know, it didn't go very well. It ended up that the five people on the panel did not agree about just about anything except you should listen to Big Finish. And none of us agreed on which stories were best and about this story arc or the other and where to start. So other than that, but it was, I had a really good time, went to several panels, found out a couple of interesting tidbits about what's upcoming from Big Finish, which I'm not going to reveal. Actually, I just did something I said I wasn't going to do and not going to flaunt that I know anything. Oh God, I'm a hypocrite. I'm just gonna shut up now.
Yeah. Never mind. If
it was announced in a panel discussion, the information's probably already out there.
It was actually not announced. It got brought up. It was,
such a naughty boy, Robert. I know you're the one that, when you're at school, I bet you're the one that always used to get sent out the room for talking at inappropriate times.
I didn't do that!
I'm kind of surprised, especially with recording with you on something else, and you're fun to edit. It was called the Big Finish Other Worlds panel, and because it was up against Paul McGann and I think even Daphne Ashbrook on stage, there were only about five people at the panel when it started, and people started coming in towards the end of it, I guess, as the Paul McGann panel was finishing.
Yeah, the Paul McGann thing was packed.
Yeah. So people started wandering in as that finished because they were trying to pack it. Instead of doing full hours, they were doing like 30 or 45 minutes to try and squeeze everybody in on stage for the maximum. Get everybody in because they had like 30 guests, but there were only about five of us there. And the person next to me, had been to one of the Big Finish Day events in the UK and had revealed that one of the Big Finish producers had told them something which the Big Finish people in front of me confirmed. So it's not something that's been officially announced. I think it's something that's supposed to be a surprise. And obviously I'm not going to reveal that while we're recording. And I can't believe I brought it up to begin with. The panels were a big highlight and going to this thing. I went to the podcasting panel, which was interesting to listen, and people talking about how they got started and the issues they've had and things to do, things not to do. Wish I'd been on the panel because it would have been, would have been quite interesting, I have to say. I think it was a bit surprising. Dr. Phil wasn't on the panel and he's somebody who's been on the podcasting panel there the last couple of years. Met him obviously, which was fun. It's a bit of a blur, to be honest. I mean, by the time it was over with Sunday.
You shouldn't drink so much at these conventions, Matthew. You really shouldn't.
That was the thing. I didn't drink. I was exhausted by the end of it. I mean, Amanda, who went with me, was telling the story that I actually just laid on the bed at one point.
She turned around. I bet you did.
Oh, God. She was on the other side of the room.
Oh, it's getting worse.
Oh, yes. Good. Yes.
I think you might have just stopped there.
Anyways,
yes.
I laid on, we had two beds, thank you very much. And her sister was there as well, I hasten to add.
Oh my God!
What? Two of them?
Matthew, put an end to it before you get any deeper.
He was trying to.
Hey! Mary, never let us down, do you, Mary?
Well.
Oh, just as well Ben isn't here. Oh, he might be in a minute. Yeah. Carry on. Matthew.
One thing I missed out on, last year when I went to Chicago TARDIS for the first time, I was delighted that they had a little screening room where they were continuously showing classic episodes. And last year, the featured episodes were all from the Trial of the Time Lord. So I was... Whenever there was something, where I had empty time to fill, I would pop in there and I was catching up on some of the classic series. And this year they were doing it again, except there were so many other interesting things going on. I never had a chance to go in there. And then when I would, they were using it as an overflow room for the main stage things. So I felt very cheated out of, being able to watch some classic episodes.
No, you got me thinking, actually. Sorry to interrupt. We said about the Peter Davison thing when that's the first time he's been able to gauge it in front of a live audience. And my sort of bugbear with having to put up with Disney Channel stuff that Isabella watches is the canned laughter. I really think the programs might be half decent if they weren't trying to make us decide or the kids decide when it's time to laugh. Because I understand if you write a comedy script, it's not up to the writers or whoever who decide where the laughter goes. So why put it in? And it really annoys me, canned laughter, and it spoils. I think I probably might enjoy some of Isabella's stuff on the Disney Channel. She's got this thing called Good Luck Charlie, which I think without the laughter track, it would actually be quite good. And it's really off-putting. And this thing, it would have been really interesting if somebody had just recorded the audience's reaction to that, and then you could, almost like a commentary track, play that over watching it and just see where the laughter is, because that's a genuine laughter track. I don't mind comedy programs that have got a genuine live studio audience, because that's a genuine reaction to it. But to put in laughter is really bad, and the Disney Channel should learn from that, because not only do they put in laughter, they put a laughter from a studio audience that's adults. It's they're kids' programs, Come on, use a bit of imagination. It really is rubbish. And when I used to watch a Disney Channel when it first started, it was great. I know they just mainly it was the old cartoons, which is fantastic, and a few films here and there. But the Disney Channel in original dramas, comedies, they could be better if they didn't try and manipulate.
Disney Channel showed things that have never been seen on TV again.
Yeah.
Back in the old days.
Yeah.
Well, I think that partly is a sign of the way that television has changed really in the last 10 to 15 years, because I mean, I used to watch the History Channel a lot, and had lots of wonderful documentaries and very informative. And today it's reality programming that's not even anywhere really
I don't want to stay on this subject for too long, but MTV used to be mainly music based and used to be great.
Now
in the British MTV, we've got absurd reality shows with foul mouthed, awful youths on it. Called Geordie Shore, which I think is based on an American program. I don't know, which is basically a group of young adults in a house getting drunk and having sex with each other. And it's appalling. And this is on the MTV.
It's called Night in Matty's House.
And I can understand that being drawn to reality TV, because I do like certain reality TV shows. But I think that certain things are just taken too far in the wrong direction. For me, the Disney Channel was putting laughter tracks on things, because you sit there watching it. This bit is not funny. They just say their line, laughter, say their line, laughter, say the line, laughter. That doesn't work. If you're watching a thing in a theatre, you might laugh at something that's not even part of the script. Somebody might do something in the background, you know, and it just depends on the audience at the time. But that's what really annoys me. I can't watch the Disney Channel and other things that have canned laughter on them. Really, I mean, I've probably dwelled on this for too long, but I wanted to have a rant.
Good.
Can I get us back on topic slightly?
Yeah, of course.
Something that Peter Davison did mention on the Three Doctors panel in regards to the Five-ish Doctors was that the main reason it's not on the Day of the Doctor DVD or Blu-ray release is that it was not completed in time to go through, I think, the BBFC clearancing and all that for the release, but he is hoping it'll be on the DVD and Blu-ray release of the Christmas special. If not, it may be released somewhere further as a box on
the box. It's funny you should say that, Matty, because I downloaded Day of the Doctor in HD from iTunes along with the Adventures in Space and Time in HD, because that's the only place you can get it in HD, because they released it in standard definition on DVD, which is great. And then the trouble is the Blu-ray issue of the Day of the Doctor also has Night of the Doctor on it, and you can't get Night of the Doctor on iTunes, and I was really bit hacked off, because there's loads of little extras you can get if you buy the series pass. So why is Night of the Doctor, which is technically part of the series, not on it?
I think it's their way
Moffitt.
I don't. I don't think it's Moffitt. To be fair,
I'm only joking.
This is the problem that I've noticed as well. I had both with Skyfall and Star Trek Into Darkness trying to figure out how in the world to buy the things, which is that because they're releasing it in so many different formats, they can afford now to put certain things on certain release on this version of it, and they'll put this special thing on that version of it. And you get to the point that if you want everything, you have to buy everything, and they get more money out of you that way.
You're right, because I've had to buy the Blu-ray of something I've already bought on iTunes of The Day of the Doctor.
You didn't have to buy it.
I did. I wanted Night of the Doctor in HD so I can play it on my big screen.
You can play it on your big screen in standard definition.
Somebody is going to explain to me this obsession people have with HD, because I don't get it.
It looks fab.
Yeah, me too.
It does. I must admit, it does look fabulous.
I understand that, but the obsession to have absolutely everything now in HD is...
Adam?
I'm going to be finding out that same sort of thing. I am getting rid of satellite TV, which was in... We got in standard definition, although we've had an HD TV for 4 years now. We only got our satellite TV in standard definition. We are cutting off the satellite dish next week and going to an HD antenna in the attic, which will be my first real experience of HDTV. And yes, that means I'm not going to have BBC America. I'm going to have to go to a friend's house to watch.
What? Wow.
But it's a money saving thing.
I'm standard definition is fine. Just that if something is available in HD, it just enhances
it.
It looks lovely. Yeah. It's just like watching stuff at the cinema, but on telly. I mean, I haven't seen Doctor Who in 3D, and I don't think I'm ever going to get to see it, unfortunately.
And as far as the new stuff, the new Doctor Who shows in HD, I don't have a Blu-ray player. I have no intention of buying one. I'm mainly trying to catch
PS3.
Up.
Secondhand PS3. Go to a porn brokers.
I can't afford
porn
it.
Brokers.
Anyway, I am mainly I'm trying to catch up as I can afford it with the old series stuff, and that's never going to be HD. So what's the point?
Well, I go back to when we had Daphne Ashbrook on here, and she talked about the problems with HD.
The head from space.
The fact HD has a habit of bringing out things that aren't normally even apparent in the way people normally see. And the fact you suddenly end up with, you know, weird skin things, and suddenly you have weird details on walls. You notice things on sets that you would never have noticed otherwise. I can see the point of it if you're doing like a sports event or a news broadcast or something where you need detail and you need to see things. But in terms of a movie or in terms of a TV show, I don't really get the point of it.
And I completely agree with you.
You can imagine what's going to happen in the next 5 years when Super HD comes out. Everybody will be looking at this current HD and thinking, oh, blimey, no.
It's called Ultra HD.
That reminds me of that scene in the first Men in Black movie where they're walking through the Men in Black headquarters and showing off the new compact disc or whatever it was, because the movie's that old, and going, we have to rebuy the White Album.
UHD is apparently brilliant, but the problem with it, as I understand it from all the reading
nothing
I'm doing, there's nothing broadcast in it yet. You can't stream anything of it because it takes actually gigs per minute from what I understand.
I know, if you think
and
about it.
No, yeah, there's
ridiculous.
No internet, there's nothing to do it. There's no, at the current technology, there's no discs or anything to do it.
It's certainly used in cinemas, weren't they?
And it's going to be cinemas. And I've been to HD presentations in the cinema, and I haven't really been impressed.
Hmm. Yeah,
On my TV screen, Blu-ray looks brilliant.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, unfortunately, my mummy's getting me a Blu-ray player for Christmas. We've already got one in the other room, but now I can have one in the room here. Obviously, if I move my Apple TV, I could stream the HD stuff I've got on my Mac, which is mainly Doctor Who, funny enough. You had to do that, didn't you, Magic? You just had to.
Sorry.
Anyway, so
one thing that you also have to wonder if certain formats are going to catch on if they go with new Super
precisely.
HD. I look at what's happened with 3D TV. That's basically they're not making.
Well, you can imagine, Kirby, in about 10 years' time, a television will actually take up the whole of a wall. To stand it in, and that'll be Super HD.
Well, that's the way they do it in old science fiction movies.
Yeah.
Or as in Fahrenheit 451,
yeah,
it's a 3D hologram in the middle of your room.
Yeah, but
exactly.
Yeah, who would imagine 10 years ago that we would have, most people would have 32 to 41 inch or 42 inch screens as standard in your house, you know? I mean, the one I've got in here, which is our second room, is a 32 inch widescreen HD TV. The one we've got in the other room is 42 inches. You know,
that's what she said.
It's like something that happened just yesterday with my putting the HD antenna in the attic. I've been rewiring my entire house for seeing things. And
is that wise?
Rewiring television signals. Let me finish what my point is. Don't distract me. I've had a Google TV box, a Logitech Review, for a couple of years now, and we only used to be able to see it in the family room. Now I've extended it so you can see it in multiple rooms. And I was talking with my wife yesterday, as she wanted to listen to an online radio station while we were eating breakfast, and the Google TV is basically, you can bring up a web browser and blah. Yes, I know. and she was going, wow, this is great. And I said, to her, don't you remember my saying 10 years ago that one day we would have internet in the kitchen? And she responded with yes. And at the time, I probably asked why.
Well, it's like,
that was precisely the reason.
Yeah, but it's like, if you look at, going back to Star Trek and that, or probably not even Star Trek, other sort of science fiction things, having portable communication devices where you'd view people, or maybe it was on wrist. We can actually buy watches now that double up as mobile phones.
I know.
And Skype.
I've got to let the cat in. I'll be right back.
Yes, take your priorities.
Meow!
The other thing I wanted to talk about in regards to Chicago TARDIS was the 20 megabyte podcast and who wore their t-shirts then?
Well, Mary wore mine. There's a picture of me with Dr.
Just
Phil.
God, sorry, carry on, sorry.
glad we don't have Smello thing on them.
Filthy get. You wore yours, Mary, well done. So did anybody sort of notice it? Probably not. But
yeah.
I'm bracing myself.
Besides Dr. Phil.
I wore it for an entire day on Friday and not a single person asked me what it was.
What a surprise.
Yeah. I know.
That
I was
what?
Disappointed.
Well,
nobody
didn't get
knows
my shirt.
Who we are.
Sorry. Oh, the shirt.
That was an interesting experience because I introduced myself as being a writer for several Doctor Who fanzines, including The Terrible Zoda and Newtopian, and one of the co-hosts of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And I do have to say I was on two or three panels with Lem Miles from Verity. And the first panel I was on with her, the historical one, and she was like, well, what do you do? And I started talking to her, and I said, well, I'm on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. She goes, I've never heard of it.
That's it. I'm deleting Verity from my blooming subscriber list now. All right, that's it.
To be fair, I think that the fact that this was brought up at the podcast panel, that there's 200 Doctor Who podcasts now, makes it very difficult to listen to everything, let alone even just to find the time to sample everything.
I've never heard of them.
You just have to listen to the best.
Never heard of them.
Isn't that right, Adam?
Yeah, there are lots of Doctor Who podcasts now.
The
Doctor
Who podcast has heard of us. And they're the most downloaded. So, Verity.
Calm down, Adam. Calm down.
I'm way behind with listening to the Verity podcast.
Mom, I'm so way behind, I'm never listening to it again.
Adam, I just want you to think that given that I introduced myself as being from that, and people may be listening to us now. She may be listening to us as you're saying
she
this going.
Won't. Sorry, I'm getting a bit cross.
She's the one who is in DeKalb, right?
The what?
No.
Sorry?
No, she's British. Ella Miles.
Scottish.
That's Britain.
Oh,
yeah.
Her. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is the one who introduces herself from being so and so in DeKalb.
Oh, so-and-so. The one who keeps bragging about all the awards she's won. Why can't it?
One of these days, I want to. She's a librarian at Northern Illinois University.
Let me ask.
One of these days, I want to tell her.
Go there.
Hey, well, that's where I went to college. That's the college where I first saw Doctor Who. Basically, right in a building directly across from the building where I know she works. So,
and one of the other Verity ladies is married to Stephen Shapansky, of Radio Free Skaro, so they're always, pushing each other's podcasts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But had they heard of Dr. Phil?
I don't know.
Well, they should
I
have done.
I have no idea.
Shapansky sat on a panel last year with Dr. Phil.
Anyway. Great. Anyway, I'm glad you all had a fantastic time, and thank you for going there and sending in the audio. And I'll tell you what, one of the biggest thrills for me at Excel was when I came around the corner and there was Daphne, and I thought, oh, I'm so excited, I'm going to meet Daphne. And then, of course, she sort of remembered me. Blimmin'
she
Verity,
remembered you when
Daphne
I brought Ashbrook, you up.
Brooke, blimmin' remembered me and knows what the 20 megabyte podcast is.
Yeah.
So Verity.
Well, that's because she was on the show, probably, Adam. Yeah, otherwise,
there's no excuse. Anyway, right, I'm going to move on. Thank you, everybody. I think it's about time we had some, emails, shall we say. I don't know if we've got...
What's wrong with the word feedback?
Hold on.
What?
We're missing something.
What?
We've had no pedantic moment of the week from anybody.
Not yet. I'm sure there will be soon.
Actually, we have.
Have we?
What?
What?
I missed it.
Some of the things from Matthew.
Yeah. Anyway, right.
Little things about Doctor Who audios that...
Anyway, oh, okay, I don't know if we've quite got enough to prevent me from singing this week, but nevertheless, this is Andy and Dawn. Or the lovely Dawn, as it says on the email.
Well, good evening, 20 Megabyteers.
It's the Wine Podcast.
It is 6:34 in the evening. I'm actually sitting downstairs for a change. My desktop is being rebuilt, so I'm on the laptop here, so I don't know how this will work. But hopefully it'll all go well. Now, obviously the important thing, tonight I have a glass of Sauvignon Blanc. It's a Chilean 2012 from the Erasmus Estate, so let's just see what we make of... Quite fruity, different citrus in there, bit of spice in there, quite dry, nice lingering aftertaste. Yeah, I think I'll give that a 7 out of 10, so there you go. Anyway, moving on to other matters. This morning I saw the third part of the Power of the Daleks reimagined. Now, I've got to admit, this was not what I was expecting. I thought it would be almost like a remake of the original one. But I must admit, I didn't enjoy it at first. I thought the first episode, I thought... what is this? It didn't seem to be going out. I could see they had adapted the script. But when I got into it, I could actually see it was very cleverly done. So what they've taken is obviously the basic premise and put it on Earth, which was quite good. Putting out somewhere near the South Atlantic, I think it was supposed to be meant to be. But actually, I did think it worked quite well. Because he obviously just had a doctor. He just, in the end, the really connection was Doctor Unit TARDIS. There was no other real connection with the series, so it's not really a reboot from that point of view. But I thought that the way they took the actions of the people, what they were trying to do, and taking it forward, I thought that it did actually work quite well. So it just shows that there's some inventiveness gone on there, taking the story forward, but resetting it into a modern environment. And also, I think what came forward was the company Vulcan. And you can see how they would make use of something like this. You know, there's new technology coming forward. They would want to make use of it. And you get people who are just totally besotted by money. You know, you do get that these days. So actually, I did thoroughly enjoy it. The ending, I must admit, took me completely by surprise when he's in there with the Daleks. I did wonder how he's going to get that guy out whose name, but it slips my mind, the one who's going to rescue the fat tubby guy. But there he is in the TARDIS surrounded by Daleks. So obviously there's going to be a sequel there somewhere. And I must say, I did love that TARDIS set. That was actually wonderful. That was the old
yes, it was
retro
nice.
TARDIS, you know, sort of Fourth Doctor, I believe. I think it's that seems to be what it was. So, I think something that I'd like to see a bit more of. I think the acting was high quality. Obviously, they're guessing those people are either professional or semi-professional actors. And the production qualities, very well filmed, very well done. So, more of the same, please. And then I've just sat down, and the lovely Nora and I have just watched the five-ish Doctors. Now, this is on the red button. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see it first time. A friend of mine knocked me a copy up, probably totally illegally. And I thoroughly loved it. I must admit, it was an absolute hoot. I get the impression that everyone did it for the sheer love of the programme. When we look at the cast list at the end, I mean, just everybody you could think of was in there. And I think that does act as a very good tribute to the series itself. Excuse me, another sip of wine. That is rather pleasant. I think that really was good fun. Davison itself obviously wrote the did the thing, but he obviously pulled a lot of favours, you know, with obviously he's I think he's got a fairly famous son-in-law who's got some connection with this other programme. But laughing our way through, you know, with the playing with the Daleks and they're all talking to each other as Daleks, and you could see they've got the same mannerisms, you could work out which one was which. You know, I assumed it went 5, 6, 7 left to right. And then when they get the security guard wants their autographs, again it was a tribute to them as actors and to the series as well. And also explains why when I went to the Excel on a Friday and they had the placards there So that's where they came from.
Hi, this is Dawn.
Hey.
Just say how great the production was.
What? On the show. Thank you, Dawn.
Yes. Very enjoyable. I particularly liked the sort of Daleks bit when they were dressed up as Daleks, everything, and I was flabbergasted that they actually got Sir Ian McKellen to say a few words. Yeah, absolute stellar cast. Well done.
Yes, so that's a lovely Dawn's now gone back into the kitchen to carry on cooking my dinner. We've got scampi and chips for dinner. Then I'm going to wander the pub with the papers. But yes, I mean, all the favours they must have pulled to get that cast suit and get Peter Jackson in, get Sir Ian McKellen and everybody. Yeah, I think that was absolutely delightful. That was one of the best things about the 50th anniversary thing that we've seen. It was something so off the wall and it was fun, and that really was his Doctor Who should be. It should be enjoyable. I didn't recognise Sean Purse at the beginning. I was thinking, I know that face, and I didn't recognise him. I'm ashamed to say that. Anyway, I've rambled on for 5 minutes, and I never do ramble. I'm not quite in the Ian Kirk class, because I think script's all his, and does it very professionally. Perhaps he'll take notes. Mine's very much done ad hoc, off the shelf, as you do. And, of course, the glass of wine. Anyway, be seeing you.
Thank you, Andy, and the lovely Dawn.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I just touch on...
comment to Andy that Peter did not have to call in any favors to have people on. People were calling him and asking if they could be a part of it. So.
Yeah. One of the things that Peter Davison told was that Sylvester apparently told Peter Jackson and Ian McKellen what he was doing. And as a result, they asked to be included in it. And in fact, Davison, I think, half jokingly said that Peter Jackson was his second unit director in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
And this is the first time he's ever written and directed anything as well as acted in it.
Yeah. Mm. So the production ended up being so big, he drug his daughter into it and said one of the stories he told was that he called her up as they were finishing the post-production on a desk or something. And, of course, Tennant has grown his hair out and had extensions put in for the production of Richard II he's in, and in fact said that he called her up and she's like, can I call you back? I'm in the middle of washing David's hair.
Anyway, right. We've got another bit of audio.
Hello, friends of Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. There was a bright comet going around the sun that was expected to shine brightly in the evening sky about now. Astronomers on Earth have lost track of it.
Excellent.
Power of the Daleks reimagined. The production values are very good. It seems to be filmed on location. The pace is quicker for a modern audience. This is 3 episodes instead of the original 6. Nick Scovell has played the Doctor before, on stage. The Daleks are fan-made. They seem to be Russell T. Davies' bronze Daleks, but painted in classic series colours.
Yep.
There are 3 people from Big Finish in this story. Nick Briggs is the voice of the Daleks for the BBC and Big Finish. Barnaby Edwards plays the Prime Minister. He's a Dalek operator in the BBC series. He has also acted in 11 Big Finish audio dramas. Lisa Bauman plays Admiral Cunningham. She is the voice of Professor Bernice Summerfield for Big Finish.
Ah.
Yep.
The original story was Troughton's first as the Second Doctor. It was all deleted. Ben and Polly were in it as his companions. There are many differences in the original. For instance, it was set on the planet Vulcan instead of Earth. Also, there was a real inspector who had been murdered. Mm.
Yes, very appropriate.
Bye for now.
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you. That's Ian Kirk.
Thanks, Captain.
Yes, thank you, Captain Kirk.
And that was about it. Unless something comes in between now and then. Now, what I forgot to do last week. Oh. Can you remember what I forgot to do last week? nobody can remember. So I have remembered now. Well, what I normally
we all
do,
forgot.
No, we welcome what I do, the new members to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. So I'm going to try my best because I don't know where we got up to previous time. So, all right, here we go. See if I can remember. Just waiting for it to load. Why is it not doing it, Kirby? It says members by join date, but it's done me first. Why has it done me first?
I'm not sure. I'm trying. No, it.
Isn't that thing?
It's in the right order for me.
It's being a little bit awkward. All members, members by join date. Ah, now it's doing something. Ah, here we go. Right, let's see if I can remember where we got up to last time. I'll tell you what was quite amusing. Oh, no, I'm not going to tell. I'll tell you off air, Kirby. Remind me to tell you off air what was quite amusing in regards to the group and stuff, members joining and stuff. Of course, a lot of these people I don't remember. Sorry, everybody. When did I last do it? It was about 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. You had already mentioned the co-owner at Lavarzi, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Had I? Oh, no, that was not to do with joining, is it?
That was.
So have I done, I'll get careful how I phrase this. We've got Michael Dangerfield. I don't remember mentioning him. Okay, so I've missed out. But I have to run through them quite quickly, just in case I've already mentioned them. Richard Costa, Carl Triggs, Rick Stevens, who we met at the DW celebration and sorted me out with my Jenna Louise Coleman. Sorry, Jenna Coleman photo, because he let me know. Chris Miller, Benjamin Mayo Mackay, Michael Dangerfield, who I acted. He's a fellow wedding videographer on the Isle of Wight. So a bit of competition, but still quite a nice chap. Ava Galliano, Ruth Summers, Kelly Tenney, Andrew Wilberforce, McCrimmon, Lethbridge, Moose.
Yeah, you've mentioned all these people already. But
I'm going to mention them again. M. Burke, Jill Bradley, Mickey Sacamano, T. Real Shelton, Robert Mags Ford, Mark McHugh, Richard Green, Jason Rushworth, Shay McCourt, Erwin Harris, Austin Thomas Hayden, Henry Mendoza.
I mentioned with him before, his dad gave me my sonic screwdriver.
And Henry Mendoza, who probably doesn't even listen to the show, he's the one that sorted me out with me Colin Baker autograph and photograph. Thank you, Henry. I remember Megan, Betty Byrne, Robert Telodo Jr., stop eating.
Who's eating crisps?
Mute your microphone when you're eating, please. Honey Moo Moo.
I'm not eating.
What's that?
I've got a bag of coins.
Well, mute your microphone. Rebecca Margaret Black, Darren Morrison, Zachary Farquhar, brilliant name, Warren A. Martin, Chris Fisher, Tyler Magnus, Holly McMiller, Ali Purs, Meninda, who is from Lavarzi, our sponsors as of January, or one of them, Aveen J., Mary Bottom, James Ferguson, Eden Judge, who's from the Isle of Wight, and Jack Cohen. So there you go. That's all the new people. I must remember to put a little line under Jack Cohen, so as when we do it in future, we know we've already done Jack. That's what she said. Right then. So.
Dear.
So that's it for the internet side of things. I think we could really move on to news. I think I've scared Ben off. He was supposed to be coming on the show, but when I mentioned you lot are going to be here, he doesn't seem to have got back to me. So let's move on to.
Does he not want to talk along with us?
I don't think he doesn't like it when he doesn't get a word in edgeways. Right.
Say one or two things, interrupt but I'm people. Not going to.
So I did get a little bit of news came through, actually. A little notification. Christmas special. Series 8, apparently, is not going to be split. It's going to be continuous.
Yes, I just posted that on the Facebook page.
Well, it does count as news, Kirby. Right.
Yes.
I haven't done news for such a long time. I don't know where to start, really. So I'm going to have to start at a certain point. They have released some Time of the Doctor posters, which look very nice. And some images as well of Matt Smith and his wig and his coat and his sonic screwdriver. There's also a trailer that I haven't seen yet, which is on DoctorWhoNews.net. So I don't know really where to start with this. There was also Paul McGann talking about his return to Doctor Who and stuff like that, which you've already alluded to. All getting very exciting because it's not long to go now to the end of Matt Smith's era.
Yeah.
Which is going to be at 7:30 on BBC One. So it's a good time for us because it means we can get home from my in-laws, get Isabella bathed and sit down and watch it. I've already banned Debbie I've already banned Debbie from spending that time undoing packaging that she was a couple of years ago, which resulted in the YouTube
video.
Disappointed.
What kind of packaging are we talking about?
Packaging of dolls and stuff. Because when children's stuff has always got so much wire things connecting it to the packaging, and you've got to put it all together and take it all apart. It's an absolute nightmare. But anyway, yeah, sorry, Kirby, Kirby, carry on.
I'm disappointed that BBC America is not going to do a simulcast again. That they're going to end up with people downloading it between the time it's shown in Britain and the time we see it on BBC America.
Indeed.
Well, the gap is only the gap is very small. So if you're that bloody desperate, God help you.
Sorry,
Kirby is. Yes.
No.
I mean, if you're that desperate to get a hold of the thing, God help you.
I've known people who are though.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
it's
so what? That's their problem, not yours.
Exactly.
Anyway,
simulcasting is very difficult to do, to kind of time everything. I mean, we've seen that recently, not only with the Peter Capaldi announcement, but also the worldwide simulcast as well. So,
right.
And something that came up repeatedly over the weekend at Chicago TARDIS, based on how they had to release the Paul McGann Night of the Doctor early, what kept the recurring theme in conversations was the fan thing has gotten so crazy that people, just to make themselves look good, always want to be the first one to know, you know, what new thing is being released, you know, the first one to have a copy of something, the first one to tell friends, you know, that they that they can leak something. And it's just become an atmosphere of craziness.
That's what Stephen Moffat was talking about.
It's gotten insane. So, to your point, Kirby, that's something that others can be crazy about, but there's no reason for you to get caught up in that.
Yeah, I mean, things have gotten so crazy that they were talking about on the fan entitlement panel that somebody went out, I think, with the parabolic microphone onto the location shoot for Day of the Doctor, and actually picked up, in attempting to pick up dialogue, a conversation between David Tennant and his pregnant wife, and then uploaded the conversation onto the internet so that people, in the event that somebody could dissect something from it. It's kind of like a huge violation of somebody's privacy to begin with, but are you really that desperate to find out something about your favorite TV show?
Yeah. This isn't the first time someone's done that with a parabolic microphone. I remember them doing that when filming for the 11th Hour.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem.
Sorry, Mary.
You've gone Cyberman.
No, me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to reboot. I'm going to have to reboot because there's lots and lots of very terrible gapping going on at the moment, so I'm rebooting. So please stay on the line.
Hello there. This is Colin Baker, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And doesn't make... I'll do it again.
Who's Bungington?
Ben. Who's Bungington?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, is that who I think it is?
It certainly is.
Oh, God.
That's what he is. Hello, Ben. Ben. Unless he's got his microphone on mute. Oh, no, hello. I can hear you now.
Yes, I hadn't turned my microphone on.
I tell you, it's really funny.
What a schoolboy error that was.
I just thought it was really funny because Matthew went, oh, God, and you came on.
Well, I have been described as such in the past.
Yes.
God of certain things, obviously. Not everything. That would be disrespectful to Eric Cantona and football. Mm. But, yes, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
Good evening, Ben. Oh,
hello.
Good evening, everyone who is in evening time, and good morning to everyone who's morning time.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
That's the polite way to say it.
Right, you've joined us just as I was about to embark on news. I have done a little bit of sort of sporadic news because we've had a little bit of sort of hints about the time of the Doctor with pictures and stuff that the BBC have released and timings of the actual episode. And the others on the show were moaning a little bit about the fact that it's not going to be a simulcast.
How dare they moan?
Wow. Nearly the same time, isn't it?
Is it? What time is it on around the world? I've got no idea.
Mine's on the next day. But that's not too far away.
You're always on the next day.
But that's only 12 hours.
I'm at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, so you're going to get it.
I'm married with a new picture.
Oh, did it come up that quick?
That's what she said!
Hey, look, for people who aren't going to be able to watch the Christmas special, you know, within 12 hours of it being on, little tip for you. Pirate Bay.
Yeah, that's what's being referred to, Mary, is what time is the Christmas special on? I believe it's, 7:30 or 8 our time?
It's 9 o'clock my time.
9 o'clock. I hadn't paid any attention yet.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what I'd actually got up to, because you were talking about stuff like that, the next bit was about the ratings roundup in regards to all the other little spin-off shows that were on over the anniversary weekend, I suppose. Like, for instance, on BBC Two, The Science of Doctor Who got 3.19 million. I thought that was quite good. And the Red Button episode, The Night of the Doctor, got 0.89 million. Oh, that's pretty astounding for a Red Button episode.
Do you think it might attract more, considering the main show got, was it 10 or 12 million, I think it topped out at, didn't it? So
and it was available, was it not on the iPlayer, or maybe it wasn't?
It was on the iPlayer, it was on Red Button, and it was also on the Doctor Who website and many other sites, you know, would have linked you into YouTube. So I don't know if that includes all the YouTube hits as well, maybe.
It doesn't include YouTube.
It does say, it says iPlayer 0.6 million, so...
There
you go. Oh. Ultimate Guide of Doctor Who, which is really, really good, actually. That was 0.78 million. That was on BBC Three.
Oh, that was a good programme, that, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Has everyone else seen that?
That's brilliant.
Yes.
No. One of the best Doctor Who compilation programmes I've
seen. Is it just called Ultimate Guide to Doctor Who? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll tell you what was truly brilliant over the time, which may not have spread around the world as much as the visual stuff, was BBC Radio 2... did an ultimate guide to Doctor Who, very much along the lines of the one that was on BBC Three, but obviously in audio form and with, you know, different interviews, obviously, and no pictures. And that was excellent. That was really good. I don't know, you know, it was on the iPlayer for a week. It's probably gone now. Well, it's definitely gone now because it's past the week.
Somebody would have ripped it, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but I've listened to it. I have to confess, I wasn't hugely impressed with it, largely because. Not? But, well, the thing, it reused a lot of material, particularly from the Project 2 radio documentary from 2005 and a couple of other radio programs they'd done. All it did was rehash material. It didn't present anything new whatsoever, really, except for some interesting comments from Mark Ayres and Louise Jameson regarding the Peter Capaldi casting and the way it was announced.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. I wasn't aware of that. I didn't hear the one back in 2005.
It's on CD, and you can get it on iTunes. It's called Project 2. Well worth seeking out to kind of get the mindset of what everybody was kind of thinking when the show came back.
Oh, I'm definitely going to dig that out, considering I'm not a massive fan of audio adventures and stuff. You know, that interests me, though, because it's just, you know, about the whole of Doctor Who, if you like. And I thought the Radio 2 thing was very good, but if it's been a rehash, then I'll check out the original and see how much has been rehashed.
Yeah. I mean, back on the subject of the Ultimate Guide to Doctor Who, the BBC Three programme, the repeat of it got 0.34 million, so therefore it got over a million anyway. Adventures in Space and Time, 2.71, that was on BBC Two.
Expected more.
The Unearthly Child episodes. Unearthly Child got 0.83, then Cave of Skulls, 0.71, Forest of Fear, 0.52, and The Firemaker, 0.46. So it was gradually faded as it went through. That was on BBC 4.
There's a reason for that.
And the reason for that.
The best episode is the best.
Yeah.
The reason was probably because it was on at about 1 o'clock in the morning by the time the last episode was on, wasn't it?
Yeah. apparently it did respectable ratings for BBC Four at least in its time.
Absolutely, yeah. The Ultimate Guide to Doctor Who further repeat got 0.59 million, so it's getting on for a million and a half now. Me, You, and Doctor Who on BBC Two. Don't remember seeing that.
Still
one.
Got it to watch. Actually, haven't seen that yet.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, I've still got it on me TV box to catch up on.
I didn't even know that was on, so that's one I'm in the dark about. That was 0.99 million. Day of the Doctor itself, 12.80 million, as we've already mentioned last week. Doctor Who Live After Party, the comedy of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
God, Zoe Ball.
Why don't they get someone...
I'm telling you, the companions talked about that after party.
Oh, yes.
They said they didn't even know that it was going to happen. They just suddenly, because they were all together to watch the episode, and then they just said, okay, come on, we've got a special thing going on in another room. Come on, come on. And they just kind of herded them in there, and they didn't know what they were supposed to do. They didn't know, you know, if they were supposed to speak or what was expected of them. So they all kind of retreated to various stools and just sat there and watched everything going on.
Yeah, it wasn't helped
and then
by
they
Zoe
were pulled
Baldwin
into that section where they had to all sit down.
Oh, that was awful.
That was awful. Yeah.
That was almost as bad as the One Direction link up. And why One Direction? Yes. They were about 13. Yeah. They were fetuses when Doctor Who wasn't even on air.
What a they weren't at all fans, prepared no. for that, so they were a little resentful that that happened.
Yeah. Oh, it was, but the whole program was made really badly by Zoe Ball. I mean, she just, oh, God. Why do they keep on getting Zoe Ball to do these TV programs? She's clueless about most
things. And that guy.
I mean, who was he?
The co-host.
Yeah, I don't like him. Yeah, plenty of people that they could have got other than Zoe Ball to present the program. I mean,
I'd just like to point out at this point, I am currently unemployed and a presenter and know about Doctor Who.
You know who I think would have been quite good, and it would have been topical? Peter Burvis. He could have presented that program, and it would have been in keeping with the world of Doctor Who.
It wouldn't have been young and fresh and funky enough for the kids, though, would it? And that's what BBC Three is about.
Me, you, and Doctor Who, I managed to see that. I don't know how I managed to see that, through time and space or something. It's really good. I enjoyed it.
I don't know what it is, so I'll have to try and find that one. Behind the Lens, Red Button program, 10 million. Don't know about that. Five-ish Doctor's Reboot, 0.49 million. That was, again, Red Button. And then a further repeat of The Ultimate Guide to Doctor Who, got 0.83 million. So that's gone up. So obviously the word's getting around that it's a good programme. Day of the Doctor, 0.68 million on its repeat on BBC Three. And then the After Party repeat was 0.27 million. So those are the sort of roundups of ratings.
The repeat of the After Show Party... You know, the After Show Party was spoiled by the fact it was Zoe Ball anyway, but the repeat of that, the entire programme, the bottom third of the screen was taken up by a big banner saying, "This is a repeat, do not try and interact." Not scrolling or anything like that. They just had the bottom third of the screen yellowed out with black writing, which, you know, I mean...
You know, the thing that annoys me about current... I love Twitter. I think it's great. But what annoys me is on a lot of these programs, they're like, and these are the tweets coming in. So...
I know.
If you want to know about tweets coming in, about a subject you really want to... You actually go on Twitter.
Go on Twitter.
And look at it yourself. Netflix, you don't need it going across a blimmin' screen.
I know. Mm-hmm.
But speaking as, a media lovey, that's done as obviously a good, easy 5 minutes of television. Mm. It's easy. You don't have to do anything for it, do you? You rely on your punters to be texting or tweeting in, and then you read out the tweets.
Do you know
what
I think they do? Just to try and prove their programme is live. It's a bit like that blimmin' million pound drop, that Davina McCall programme.
Yeah.
They do it on there. It's a quiz show. God's sake.
Yeah. But I suppose, you know, what does that prove? It doesn't prove anything.
No.
Really, because, you know, I'm sure you remember, Brad.
You know what they're trying to do? They're trying to... create a community sort of spirit by that.
Maybe.
So everybody's chatting along and talking about it at the same time.
Yeah, of course.
And they do
with
it on
network. Bloody comments.
Yeah, they do it here.
Sorry, carry on.
Well, they do it here in the U.S. Even on drama programs, they'll have a little Twitter hashtag in the bottom of the screen to get people to tweet along
Which
to
is
it.
Fine.
Well, that's something that advertisers are now looking at now, from my understanding, at least here in the U.S. It is in the U.K., is they're looking at how big of a Twitter conversation you can get going in the middle of a program to get people's attention to the advertisers as well.
But surely if people are paying attention to, you know, what other people are tweeting, they're not watching the program.
Yeah. Okay, so it's just like having a conversation with someone across the table from you on your cell phone. which is
yeah, it's rude, isn't it? Anyway, back to the news.
It'd be a brilliant way to converse with my wife. I might suggest it.
Yeah,
yeah, over the table at the Christmas dinner. Anyway, right, back to news. Very sad news.
That won't happen, mate.
The actor Barry Jackson has passed away at the age of 75. Barry Jackson, he played Drax in the Armageddon Factor, the one who said to the Doctor his nickname.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
And he was, you know, he's still very active. Up
in Armageddon, sick of it.
Very good.
Armageddon out of here.
They're actually releasing times for the promotional films for Time of the Doctor, actually, which I'm not going to mention. Canadian TV release of The Enemy of the World and Adventures in Space and Time. That's of interest to the Canadians.
Been released here already.
Apparently, DoctorWhoNews.net are looking for volunteers to assist with the Doctor Who News and News in Time and Space
Matthew?
I have to confess, I'm already thinking about it.
What a surprise.
I applied a year ago when they were looking for people then, and I never heard anything back from them, so I'm wondering if I should even bother this time around.
Well, if you read it, it says they're looking for people outside of the major markets in the UK and the USA and all that. They're looking for people from smaller venues.
Yeah.
And the final bit of news, which I'm going to mention, because there is a thing about Capaldi discussing the Doctor, which is a little video to play, which I'm not going to play, is apparently there's another new planet that's been discovered. There's a petition to name it Gallifrey.
Oh, goodness.
Hey, as long as it's in the constellation of Cerberus.
Of course.
there's already a asteroid called TARDIS, so it makes sense. You know, we might as well name a planet Gallifrey.
Yeah, fair enough.
But the problem is, as soon as they call it Gallifrey, surely it will disappear.
Yeah.
It'll explode.
Then Moffat will bring it back.
Boo! Boo! Stephen Moffat! How dare you mention his name?
Anyway, a
little bit of news. Have you seen this morning apologies if you've mentioned this already, but obviously you're joining late due to Argos mucking up my daughter's Christmas present. What's his name? Moffat said that the next series is going to be non-split.
Yes, we have mentioned this, which is great, isn't it?
Oh, well, I'm really sorry to bring you news that you already knew.
No, you haven't really.
I was just trying to be helpful.
No, but what do you think of this particular news, Ben?
Much better.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It annoys me. The fact, there's a surprise, something annoys Ben. It annoys me the fact that we're going to have to wait from the December to the 25th, probably until July or maybe August next year for more Doctor Who.
I'm getting
and the fact that, that we've had, what, six, seven episodes, eight episodes this year. How many have we had? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we had 8, wasn't it? 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Which is just rubbish in its 50th anniversary year.
Yeah,
there should have been a full series. There should have been the specials. Yep. And, you know, they shouldn't be... The thing that really gets me, I kind of, like, touched on this last week, I think, when I was just talking to Adam, is the fact that Doctor Who pays for itself.
It does.
You know, it's not a question of money. With all the money that they get in...
It's always been like that.
So why don't they make it more regularly? If it's because Stephen Moffat can't be bothered because he's got to write 2 episodes of Sherlock a year, then get someone else to run the show.
Hold on. Mm. One, Moffat writes 1 episode of Sherlock every 2 years.
Yes, secondly,
the decision to do split seasons was made by BBC management, not by him, as a way because of the budget cuts that your beloved British government has elected into power. And freezing the TV
British
license
government.
Fee.
Ooh.
That froze that, and they figured out that the easiest way to do it was to split it over 2 financial years, hence why we've got the split seasons.
But that doesn't make sense when it pays for itself, though, does it?
I agree.
The money that comes in from Doctor Who is not saved and spent only on Doctor Who.
It is spread out over
all the BBC programs.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. It comes into BBC Worldwide, and it goes into the BBC Worldwide funds, and then that gets... Part of it's siphoned off to BBC drama.
Who looks after Doctor Who then?
I think, though, I don't know, to be honest with you.
It's normally the companion, isn't it?
That's understandable. That's understandable, though, isn't it? The fact that they spread the money across the whole of the BBC. But what is not understandable is the programme that's bringing in all this money isn't given enough to keep a more regular series going.
That's the point, though, isn't it? The fact that they make all the money for it, and yet they neglect the thing that makes the money for them.
Yes.
And so therefore, by reinvesting some of the money they make from the DVDs and just the sales of the program around the world. It gives them enough to do a full series every year without any talk of recession or cutbacks or whatever we want to go into. The fact is, it makes enough money to pay for itself, but they'd rather make other things, which makes no sense at all when you consider the money and the viewing figures.
Agreed.
Ben, if that's the case, then the show would Michael Gray would never have pulled the show off the air in 1985 to begin with.
Oh, no, absolutely, completely see your point there, because it made more money then than it does now.
Yeah, there's the famous Douglas Adams quote about, you know, that went to the BBC accountants about why in the world did you cancel Doctor Who? It's your biggest moneymaker, and they gave an answer, and he's like, well, fire the accountants, don't take a program off the air that's making money. It's also worth mentioning that all this revenue that Doctor Who is producing outside the UK is going into BBC Worldwide, which is the commercial arm of the BBC. Doctor Who is produced by BBC Television. So the money's not necessarily going back, but it is bizarre, to be perfectly honest.
It's not right, is it? No. I mean, I'm sure everyone agrees with that, with like a full series, 13 episodes, and a Christmas special every year. Split it if you want to split it between March and August. I prefer if it was in a 13-episode run. It means you get more into it, and we can all sit there on Twitter a lot more, telling everyone what we think about it during the programs and not watching them.
And spoiling it for the Americans.
We'll get it a day before them. Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't make sense not to put it on. You know, it's one of the BBC's biggest programs in viewing figures. It's biggest in financial terms. So why not take it seriously? Stop peeing about with it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's full series every year, minimum.
And it's not
plus
as if they have a lot of pool of
and
amazing writers, you know, and amazing production people that can't keep it more regular as far as a ticking over series. It should really be running when it is going to be running this year, but you know, obviously the latter part of the year, 12 episodes. Brilliant. That's perfect time for it to be on. But they could have done that last year, just kicked it off in September. So therefore, we would have just had all those episodes, including the time of the Doctor, the Day of the Doctor and the Name of the Doctor, all sort of running concurrently with a little break
name
between
of the Doctor.
Yeah, the Name of the Doctor, which was the last episode of Series 7, and then the Day of the Doctor, which obviously is the next episode. They do sort of, you know, they seem like a two-parter in some ways. And I so very much
Lunch
suspect
of the Doctor.
The Time of the Doctor will be the final part of a three-part story.
You're wrong there. I've heard that the first episode of the new Capaldi series is called The Eyebrows of the Doctor.
Well, yeah, we did see The Eyebrows of the Doctor in the
followed up
Doctor.
By The Waffle Iron of the Doctor.
But anyway,
the slightly warped left shoe of the Doctor.
So,
oh, dear.
And
depends
of the Doctor.
Yeah, we had that last week. Anyway,
the mildly undercooked beef bourguignon of the Doctor.
So, Ben, have you heard anything else that we might not have mentioned on the show?
I'm just having a quick look at my Doctor Who news thingies to see if I can find
as
anything.
As long as it's not DoctorWhoNews.net, which you've just looked at.
No, of course it's not. It's DoctorWhoNews.com. Completely different website.
Well,
totally different stories. No, I don't actually think there's anything else that I've heard this week that needs bringing to the group's attention. No, can't find anything else. Seems about it for me.
Okay. So, whowon.co.uk are our continual sponsors.
We love them. We love them with all our hearts.
And
both of them.
Is that Mary?
Whowon.co.uk. You can't get me on that one anymore.
Yes.
No, we'll have to. Damn. All right, Mary, who are our new sponsors?
Lavazzi.
How disappointing.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, it is. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, they do make lovely stuff.
They do. Well done.
What an advert.
There we go, Meninda. We got Mary on the show.
They do make lovely stuff.
I'm going to clip that and send them it and make them a little advert.
Yeah.
They make lovely stuff.
They make lovely stuff.
No, they do.
I think maybe Asda and Walmart should adopt that slogan. They sell lovely stuff.
The latest products from whowon.co.uk. We've got logo coasters, price of $19.99. That's for 8 of them. Lanyards.
I love them.
With Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey, Van Gogh Exploding TARDIS, I Love Doctor Who and Doctor Who. DWM 467. Apparently that's got some downloads of Big Finish stories,
I've got
Matthew.
That.
I have heard. It's not out here in the US yet. Probably won't be for another month. So
go on then, Robert.
You want to know what the downloads are?
I do.
Okay, I've just got the magazine in my hand. It's Cuddlesome, which came as a free DVD release.
I think I've got that.
Back in a while ago. Mission of the Virens.
Virens,
which came with the Mind's Eye. Urgent Calls, which came out on ID, CD. The Veiled Leopard, which was a DVD release. The Sirens of Time, Part 1. Destination Nerva, Part 1. Dark Eyes, Part 1. 1963, The Assassination Games, Part 1. And the Short Trips episode, Rise and Fall.
So can you download all of those, or is it just one of them?
Hold on, how many downloads altogether? 9 downloads.
That's good, isn't it?
But there's only, what, I think 4 or 5 full stories.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, it's a big teaser thing. The idea is to get you to go check out the other ones where you can sample the first episode, which is...
But...
You know what's nice about it is you get these nice collectible art cards of all the Doctors, as well as a mini booklet, which is just like, say there was a magazine released just towards the time of the Dalek Invasion of Earth coming out. And it was like a teaser booklet for that. So it's quite a nice package.
Thank you. But talking about teasers, somebody's just put on Twitter that there's a picture of Peter Capaldi in his full costume, and you click on it, and it's just Peter Capaldi's eyebrows in the the face of Bo, the face of Bo's glass thing.
Oh,
that was one thing that was never actually finished off, that story, was it?
What, the face of Bo thing?
Yeah, it was always left assuming that it may be Captain.
Yeah.
No one's ever, it's never been confirmed that it was or wasn't. It's kind of just like one of those Stephen Moffat, Russell T. Davis to Stephen Moffat things that got lost.
Mm. It
was a good character. It could have had a lot of storylines running up to it. It still may do, because there's rumours that John Barrowman's going to be in the next series. So there's some news for you if you weren't aware of that.
Barrowman!
Might be a time war, or maybe there isn't.
I'm talking about.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's depending whether we're going to bother with the time war. But, so it's just a shame, because it would have been good to have a, yes, he definitely is, but they don't do that, do they?
No, but the thing is, Moffat was supposed to tidy up all the loose ends, wasn't he, by the end of Matt Smith's era. What hasn't been tied up yet? Stop going that funny noise, Robert. What's been not tied up yet that he needs to tidy up?
The exploding part.
Why the TARDIS exploded?
Yeah, from Pandorica opens, I think it's the big one that the business about Silence Will Fall, because there's a lot
coming up in the Christmas special, I think.
Yeah, yes. I think that's the other sort of big one that hasn't been answered.
Didn't one trip over, though?
What?
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. Well done, Robert.
I was waiting for something like that.
I
was waiting for a gap to get my own version of that in, so I'll give you that one.
Oh, don't wait for gaps. They don't happen.
No.
They do on Skype, unfortunately, and I have to edit them out.
Yes.
Can I just ask everyone, because it's been a long time since I've been on with the big gaggle of people. I suppose that is probably the official term for podcast recorders, a gaggle. What was I going to ask? Oh, that was it. What do we make of this new seemingly thing that they do now where the companions don't stay with the Doctor?
If we go back to
Peter Davison era, well, all the classic Doctor Who's, you didn't have the case where Rose Tyler used to pop home for 15 minutes Jenna Louise Coleman.
Yeah.
Clara.
Or Martha.
The Pons. The Pons went home too.
They do.
They all go home for a bit. Doctor then picks them up 3 months later or something. The Pons.
It's a big
massively.
Deal for Clara though.
Clara's changed blooming job since the last time we saw her. That just never used to happen. When you used to enter the TARDIS, you used to stay with the Doctor in the TARDIS. Yeah. That was your life.
Yeah.
There was no going home visiting your mum.
I don't understand the point of it myself.
They go very Andred.
Yeah, I think it's one of those RTD inventions that he brought into it when he brought the show back.
Did he?
The feeling that Well, he did, because you think about Rose is sort of the archetype for all this, and going back and establishing her whole family.
Yeah, but she always went off with the Doctor, though. She never stayed behind and got picked up later. She was always with the Doctor.
Yeah. I mean, she went home, got a change of clothes, and, you know, zoomed off again. Whereas, you know, everyone
Clara
else...
Clara stays.
Yeah. She goes on, does a job. Clara goes home for a bit. Yeah. Does her job for a month. And that's the other thing I've never quite worked out. Why does it actually matter what they do in their life without the Doctor? Because when the Doctor kind of like picks them up and then drops them off again, the time in between, he could just drop them off 13 seconds after he's picked them up. And
well, that's what he did with Amy Pond. He picked her up the night before her wedding and dropped her off in time for her wedding.
That's very true. But it doesn't always happen, though, does it? There's lots of times where, I mean, I've been watching on one of the channels you get on Sky over here, was it Dave or something, that they're re-showing all of the art. They're not classic Watch. Ones, actually. They're from, yeah, Watch, that's it. You know, they started with Tennant. They're working through Tennant again now. And we had Doomsday the other day. Had to get me tissues out for the end of that one. That was sad. Rose, a bit where she's against the wall and he's against the
Somebody's
wall.
Someone's done a picture of that. They swapped for Tennant's face with Bingo's. I mean, sorry, Billy Parker's. Anyway.
But yeah, well, I just wondered what the collective thought of that.
I wonder if having them live normal lives and then leave with the Doctor makes more of a connection to us. And
excellent
how
point, Mary. Excellent
we
point.
Would like, you know, if they stay more connected to Earth than we can, I don't know, connect to them better. I don't know.
But it doesn't go with the flow of classic Who, does it?
Right,
I mean, obviously things are allowed to change.
What does anyone?
That's a very good point, because that's made me think about something from Day of the Doctor that I only thought about afterwards. You know the bit near the end where all the Doctor's TARDISes are flying around Gallifrey to, you know.
But well, all the Doctors.
Well, yeah.
There's only 13 of them, and we know there's more than that.
Yeah,
so what happened to the rest of them? Were they
13 of them then? Whatever. But I seem to remember that the first and second Doctors didn't really have any control over their TARDISes at all. So how were they able to steer their TARDISes there to do this particular event when they had no control over them? And nor did the third, for that matter, for most of the time. I know it was romantically very nice.
I have an answer for this.
Oh, here we go. Go on, then.
Randomizer. It is one of the theories of the discontinuity.
Baker, though.
No, but if you want to retcon things, which we fans love to do, they just went around with the randomizer on, because particularly the first and second Doctor were running away from the Time Lords anyways. So it makes sense.
And remember in The Doctor's Wife, Idris says to him, you know, I never took you where you wanted to go, but I always took you where you needed to be.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough.
But, and they all forgot what just happened with Gallifrey anyway.
Okay.
So
Fair enough. Okay. Accepted to a certain degree.
And the whole story is just fluff, and I'm totally rejecting it.
But I think thank you, Mary. I accept that it is a bit of a modern thing. I can't see the point of it. I don't know if the Doctor came and took me away. I don't know if I'd keep on wanting to come home all the time, knowing full well it's a time machine, so I can come back at any time. What's the point in having it? You know, going back home for a job, when you can be on the TARDIS and eat whatever the Doctor's got, and you can sleep in the TARDIS.
Slightly overdone beef burgundy, as we said earlier.
Yeah, you know,
who says it's their choice that they go home?
I don't know. And also, the fact is that Clara, especially loads of Claras around, isn't there? How does the Doctor know he's picking up the right Clara every time he goes back? And that's part of the story that he's, you know, he's.
You wouldn't
up.
Think that's some sort of cock up by Stephen Moffat's writing, would you?
No.
Never. Never.
But, that works, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I'd like to go back to the companion staying with the Doctor scenario myself.
Yes.
Yeah, I think most fans would, because it's just how it was always done.
It used to be. Yep.
And I know I know people sometimes want to push for change, like having a crazy female Doctor or something like that. who'd want that? But
I don't.
I'm glad to hear it. But no, I just think, you know, things can change, but you've got to be careful what you change, because there is always, you've got to bear
Adam,
the thinking fans in mind, haven't you?
What are we doing next week and when?
You've got next week off.
Some of us have to go.
Yeah, I have to go.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you've got next week off. It's episode 199, if you look at the schedule. I'm not quite sure what's happening yet, but you
Oh, is that an Adam and Alicia special?
Yeah, it's a me and somebody special. I don't think Alicia's going to be involved in it. At the moment...
Isabella special?
Maybe.
Pizza!
May well be Isabella, yes. But it's a special next week, and then after that, it's episode 200. And I hope you're all going to be around for episode 200.
Woo!
Now, the week before Christmas.
Yes.
It is the week before Christmas. Sure. I think somewhere around the 22nd. Hey. Well, the week off Christmas,
so you will let us know what we're doing that day so we can be prepared.
Oh, it is in the schedule, funny enough. I'm just going to have a look.
Oh, if that's the 23rd.
The schedule has disappeared.
Oh, if that's the 23rd, I might not be able to make that one.
What?
Because the merchandise got pinned.
It's,
the 23rd is a Tuesday.
Oh, hang on.
Well, I remember we were talking about episode 200 being time of being the Christmas
month. It is, episode 200.
23rd is Monday.
Sorry, episode
23rd is Monday.
200 is the 27th of December, according to this schedule. Yes? So next week's episode 199, you get the week off, and I have to say happy Christmas to you, because you've got the week off. So basically, it's your Christmas holiday. I don't get one, but you do.
do we still get paid when we're on holiday?
Maybe. And yeah, so around the 27th, it's not a fixed date, but around the 27th will be our Christmas special, and which is also our 200th episode.
Well,
27. That's 2 weeks off. That's 2 weeks off.
Is it?
Basically.
How is it two weeks off?
Oh, I see. Because 1 week off puts us on Monday the 23rd.
Yeah, but isn't that...
Let me have a look
Christmas
at my diary.
I'm not recording on Christmas Day.
We're talking Monday the 23rd or Sunday
Monday
the 22nd.
Yeah.
Or Sunday the 22nd.
Because next week is the 16th.
But what I wanted to do there... What I wanted to do there was try and make our 200th episode the one about the Christmas special. That's why there's a bit of a gap. I think
that's fine.
So, we get 2 weeks off.
Yeah, if you want.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay. So when would we be recording? On the...
around the 27th.
It's a Friday.
Yeah.
Why don't we all get together for a Christmas special?
Yeah.
Why don't we all meet up? Why don't we meet up in a place called Farnborough in Hampshire? Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
You pay.
You can all pay your own airfares, but you're more than welcome to sit on my sofa.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am actually off work on that Friday.
I am too, so
we can do Friday.
So am I, and every foreseeable Friday for a long time.
So the 27th of December. Let's see what... Robert, it's your job to try and beat Reese into submission. Just remind him, there won't be a quiz.
And since I'm off that day, we can record at any time. It doesn't have to be in the horrible...
Oh, what are you trying to say? That you want me to give up my evening to record the show so you can record yours in the afternoon? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it can be any time during the day.
It can be mid-afternoon for you.
Okay, well, we could technically think about doing it around 12 o'clock. I've got a funny feeling I've got to go to a panto that day, though.
Let us know the time, because I got to go.
Let us know the time. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Let it snow. The weather outside is frightful.
I've got to go.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye, Kirby. Goodbye, Mary.
And me too.
Goodbye.
Have a nice Christmas. Goodbye.
So bye all and Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Happy Christmas.
Bye. Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Fancy Pants.
Shut up, Magic. So where are we up to? I think that's about right. Yeah, so the Christmas special around the 27th. Right, so Castrovalva is our 5th of January review episode and a new series of You Won't Get This One. And I'm so delighted to say you probably will get that one because I've acquired Trivial Pursuit Doctor Who Edition, which saves me from writing loads of questions.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I saw that.
Yes.
If only there was some sort of Doctor Who quiz book around.
No, well, there's that too. That that's what will be, obviously, brought to you by the Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book. This week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Here it is. You can hear it rattling. That's my Trivial Pursuit, which will keep me going for a while.
How much was that, Adam?
£10 on, I think it was Play.com.
Oh, excellent.
No, it was Amazon. Amazon, yeah.
What I forgot to mention last week.
What was it you forgot to mention last week?
I forgot to tell you something, which is quite interesting.
Oh, yes.
Just opening up my telephone to see what it is. Right, there's an app available, right?
Yeah.
Nigerian Scams.
Yes, that's it. And you give them all your bank details and they give you money for free. I haven't found it working yet. No, there's an app called Quiz Up. One word, Quiz Up.
Yeah.
And it's got loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of sections about loads and loads of things, but it's also got a really good Doctor Who quiz section. Mm. It's a free app, there's loads and loads of questions, and it's good fun. You can play from people all around the world. And currently, well, the last time I looked, I was about third in the world, which was pretty good. But I did hammer it for a good couple of days and play it for loads and loads. But it's just like any quiz on the internet or computer or whatever. If you play it for long enough, you get to know all the questions anyway. So it's just a case of remembering.
Obviously, I'm pretty sure, Ben, you hadn't actually played You Won't Get This One. So it'd be nice to get you in on the proceedings. Just to see if you have any chance of beating Mr. Competitive Matthew. Yes.
I'll tell you one thing, it would be massively embarrassing for me.
Why?
Well, unless you ask me questions like, who's the worst boss of Doctor Whoever?
Okay, I'll get a random question out of my...
can you try and make this one... All right, get a random question, but try and make it what colour's the TARDIS?
I can do a TARDIS question, which is...
Oh, go on
one.
Then.
Oh, hang on. There isn't a TARDIS. I can do a Time Lord question.
Okay.
There we go. What star did Wilf notice had disappeared first in the alternate world where Donna and the Doctor never met?
Oh, the one in the sky.
Nearly right, yes. Matthew, do you know?
I actually don't know.
Hey, there's hope for us with this quiz. It's Orion. So there you go. That's the sort of thing we'll
of be course looking. It's Orion, yeah.
That question may
give
well
me another.
Again.
Give me another.
Another? Oh, good grief. Hang on.
I failed at one. Let me
okay, let's have another
is
go.
It all
right,
you,
this is
all new,
I'll give you one. This is one last question before we go. It's just random Trivial Pursuit questions. So the categories are Time Lords, Companions, Episodes and Stories, Years and Dates, Monsters,
it's all new
cast,
who?
Crew and Beyond. It's just Doctor Who in general. All who. Right, so what category would you like out of those ones then, Ben?
Companions, please, Bob.
Here we go. Yeah. What is the name?
So it's Nicholas Knox.
What is the name of the key that UNIT entrust Martha with when Davros moves to the Earth?
Oh,
I know that the Osterhagen.
Is your
the
name Osterhagen. Ben? Like point deducted from Robert.
The Osterhagen.
Did I get it right?
Of course, you got it right, but it wasn't your question, so you get a point deducted.
Excellent. Oh, I'm so happy
I just get
that.
The point, and I get a point for me getting the question right too. Not off the back of getting the answer, obviously. But so I get 2 points for that question.
I might write a few questions in relation to the review story, but I think it'd be nice to use these Trivial Pursuit questions, don't you think?
I quite like the idea, if you have time, and obviously you don't do a lot of work, of of you watching the episode and writing questions about it.
That's what I do normally.
Clearly I know that from listening to the podcast all the time.
Yeah. And that's why Reese can't be bothered to come on the show, because he doesn't, because everybody has to sort of pay attention and write notes when coming to the quiz.
He's got some time off now, though, coming up.
Mm, maybe. Well, if he's going into professional acting, he's going to get quite a lot of time off, isn't he?
Yeah, if he's getting a job as a full-time actor, we'll see him every week from now on. Until there's an opening in Neighbours.
Or Home and Away.
Yeah,
until Bouncer needs recasting, then we should be all right.
That's dead.
Is he?
Harold
on that maybe note, what a nice way to end the show. Please join us again next week. Well, it'll be me and somebody. Not quite sure who yet. Supposedly.
I'll probably be here.
Supposedly me. Well, I might be here. We are doing Scream of the Shalker, apparently. That's the cartoon Doctor Who story with Bouncer. Sorry, no, with Richard E. Grant. So hopefully.
I've never seen that. I'll try and watch that over the week. Just
it's
in
available
case I'm
on DVD.
I'm sure it is. It's also available for free.
DVD.
So until then, thank you for joining us. See you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace looked out of my mind. I'm in love. What's the use in trying? All you get is pain. When I need sunshine on that rain. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of dynamite. I'm a believer, I can believe her if I try. I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. Oh, I'm a believer. I could believe her if I tried.
Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.